it's really the silver lining in all of these suspensions, is that when a team loses a suspended guy for whatever amount of games it's going to be, he doesn't count against your 53-man roster. So the Giants have Eric Hermann on the side, and they have Jaron Hosley on the side. Neither one of them have to count against the 53. So it's kind of like having 55, if you will. And I know that it's weird because you want to punish the guy as a league for doing something wrong, and at the same time, you kind of benefit the team because it's almost like having an extra practice squad player. You know what I mean? In a way. Because the Giants really have 55 guys.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like they're still trying to keep him, but he has not really shown anything like that we can trust in him, say if like someone got hurt.
Well, like, here's the only thing I would say to you. If the Giants get an injury in the secondary over the course of the first month of the season, they know they've got a corner now who's just sitting there, who's a veteran, who's familiar with the system, who's practiced with everybody, you know, knows the locker room, blah, 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 blah. And when it's time for him to come off of the suspended list, they can immediately put him into the 53 and say, great, we got somebody. We're fine. I mean, they don't have to go looking for anybody. So that's how that. But let me make something clear to you. If the Giants are very happy with their roster, they are under no obligation to keep Jaron Hosley. They could just set him free. They could release him. So it could go either way. But it's nice to know as a team that you have this kind of insurance policy sitting there on the side.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. And last thing, the tight ends. I kind of like to see, what's his name? Daniel Fields. I like to see him start, you know, to get the, you know, the first start the game, see how he does, then put Larry Donnell in. I feel like Larry Donnell, he's not as mature yet. Like, I feel like he's like kind of like soft, if that's the good word to use.
Well, I wouldn't use that word. What I would say about Donnell is he's got the most pure receiving skills of the tight ends the Giants have. However, again, he's got to grow into the position. He's inconsistent. He does not necessarily do a good job in the blocking part of the game. There's no doubt, and Tom Coughlin has said this, that Daniel Fells was the most consistent and the most steady of the Giants' tight ends in terms of all of the facets of the position. So I would agree with you. I would start Daniel Fells if it were me, but I can't tell you what they're going to do because maybe they see a matchup that they want to exploit with Donnell, who is more of a receiver. So maybe they come out with Donnell instead. I have no idea what the game plan says because, let's face it, the players don't even have it yet either. So I can't tell you who's going to start. But does it really matter? Coughlin said they're going to go tight end by committee because nobody stepped up and took the job.
That's true. That's true.
Thanks for the call, man.
I wanted to see that's all I have to say. So thanks for taking my call.
All right. We'll get you next time. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow, it's a delay of game on you. 5 yards.
There's a lot of penalties this morning. Good to be with you, Paul. I'm glad that I am finally up and about.
And in one piece, which is always the most important thing.
Absolutely.
No question. We were discussing the 53 and the fact that some of these guys have gotten back on the practice field, John Beeson being the headliner of all.
Big plus.
Yesterday's big topic for those who were late in getting back from their Labor Day weekend holiday excursions was that Kelce Quarles had not only been cut on Saturday and told he was going to go to the practice squad, Bill Belichick scooped him up and signed him to the Patriots before he could re-sign with the Giants. And so there were a lot of people upset about this yesterday.
Which also happened with Jake Ballard. The Patriots did the same thing when the Giants put him on waivers. He was injured waived, and they wound up claiming him. Obviously, Jake Ballard wasn't able to do much after that.
You had to remind them.
I'm sorry, but
New
England
fans are upset enough.
I know. I'm pouring salt in the wounds this morning. It's just that New England has a track record, I guess, is what I'm getting at, where they'll look at who the Giants will get rid of and then come in and, like you said, scoop up a player.
The reason that they do that, though, Lance, is because Belichick is always finagling with the salary cap. And so he will grab as many cheap players as he can get. And this is one way to do it. And hope that he hits with a couple of them. Because he's always got a bunch of guys who are on the high end of the salary scale. For instance, Mankins this year, who he's looking to jettison every year. I mean, this is an annual thing with Belichick. he gets rid of at least one big contract every summer, and sometimes people drop their jaws and say, well, how could he do that? Well, guess what? That's how he manages his cap. And the only way you can afford to do that is if along the way you accumulate a bunch of guys at the five and dime store and hope a couple of them come through.
Because that combined with draft picks doesn't kill your salary cap. For example, they got rid of Ryan Mallett. They traded him to the Texans, who's still on his rookie contract. But Jimmy Garoppolo they just brought in, who's got four more years to play out his rookie deal. So it's thinking big picture, long term, as opposed to worrying about what exactly he's going to come out and play this season.
And that is one of the reasons why, above all else, because they know how to manage their salaries, that the Patriots continue to be top contenders each and every season.
Bringing it back to the Giants' standpoint, are they all worked up about Odell Beckham Jr. and the fact that Tom Coughlin is trying to put an end to that storyline?
Really, that was not much of a topic yesterday. More about the Quarles thing. That upset a lot of people. And, again, he played well during the summer, and I had him on the 53. So that was a much hotter topic yesterday than the Beckham thing. Then Tom Coughlin, as I was talking about earlier before you got in, did shut down the whole Beckham conversation. He just doesn't want to hear another question about him until he gets on the field. And I think that's fair. I mean, why?
To provide updates every day is not going to do anything. It's not going to get him back on the field any quicker. 2 to 3 weeks, Reuben Randall could take over punts. Who knows?
You know what I thought was funny? Well, I think Preston Parker probably
another will. Option as well.
But you know what's funny? Tom said, you know, when he gets out there, I'll let you know. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'd like to think if he's out there, we'll see him.
You'd hope, unless they're just putting him in a secretive chamber where he's going to practice on his own. Hopefully, you would get the clue if he is back on the field. All right, I guess we could reopen up the phone lines here this morning, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. He is at Giants WFAN. I'm at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. And we go to Nugs in Minnesota. Nugs, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
Hey, well, Nugs. What you got?
Not much, man. I'm just a little bit scared, man. Just to reiterate what's been said between yesterday and right now, I mean, the Kelsey Quarles thing was kind of like, I don't want to say it was a punch to the gut because it wasn't really that big of a, you know, of a thing to me, but just to see a guy who's young, undrafted, flashing, you know, signs of talent, and you know we don't figure out how to keep him. I mean for the whole preseason, I mean I've been agreeing with you guys, like all the offensive linemen who are gonna be on this team aren't on this team, but at the same time, we're not going to do anything as far as, you know, I mean, like guy said, there was a couple good offensive linemen out there who got cut who were, I wasn't going to say that they were top shelf guys, but, you know, Max Starks I was looking at.
No. The Starks is way, 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 way done. You don't even want to touch him.
He's done?
Here, Eric, the two guys who you'd want to think about if you were the Giants, and I put this up on my Twitter the other day, guys who'd be on my radar if I were the Giants. Eric Winston got cut by Seattle the other day. I certainly would put in a call to him. And Eben Britton, who was cut by the Chicago Bears. And he plays not only tackle but also guard and has also played the jumbo tight end for the Bears. He would be the other guy. He's only been in the league like 7 years, too. It's not like he's really, really old. Those would be the two guys who I would target if I were the Giants and wanted to bring in a veteran offensive lineman who I know has a resume and probably would not need a whole lot of time to pick up the plays and at least give me a chance to get him on the field quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand what's the emotional connection to Mosley. I mean, I don't see him. I'm not in practice. But is he, like, good enough when he's healthy that we would?
He's improved, but he's still inconsistent. And so he's a young player. Those things are going to happen. There'll be growing pains. But here's the thing. Remember now, no practice today, no practice tomorrow. They get back on the field Thursday. Don't be surprised if you hear about a player transaction today or tomorrow before they get back to work. This is that little gray area right now where you could start finagling some players if you want to. And I'm going to tell you, as much as I would have already put that call into those two linemen, maybe the Giants have. Maybe Eric Winston's on a plane landing at Newark Airport in 10 minutes.
Could
I don't
work
know
out
the
tomorrow
to
or today? Yeah, absolutely. That's a possibility. I think Paul brought up a good point, Nugs. The fact that you do have 2 days without practice, they could very well bring in players. Tuesdays was very common last season. As in previous years, they tend to bring in free agents and work them out.
There will be a van in of players today. I'll tell you that. I don't know who's on it, but there'll be some guys in today. And whether or not they can really help remains to be seen.
I'm hoping that we do something because at the end of the day, our most valued asset is Eli. And, you know, Jerry's cool, but then it's like Lynn says a lot. You know, you can't always pick up another man's garbage, you know, and try to make him into, you know, your shining treasure or whatever. And I think Jerry will be – I think Jerry's serviceable, but I just think that there's somebody – Somebody's out there who's better than the guys we have right now at right guard. I mean, no telling when Schwartz is going to come back with, you know, the toe injury. And, I mean, a dislocated toe for a 300-pound polar bear on the line is, you know, that's concerning because it's not necessarily like he's going to come back and be, you know, 100% mobile.
Here's the thing. First of all, and we'll let you go, and I'll finish addressing this off of your call. They've at least got a body in John Jerry who's had experience in this league and has a semblance of knowing what to do. Now, you may not like him very much. You may not think he's a very good player, and that's fine. But at least there's somebody they can plug in there. They also have Dallas Reynolds, who's a backup center slash guard. He's a swing interior lineman who has played in this league before. And so at least there's somebody you can put in the spot if you have to. My bigger problem is that right now there's no backup tackle on this team.
Because everybody's hurt. Charles Brown and James Brewer hurt.
So now if you go to Detroit with Beattie, who has yet to play more than 35 snaps in a preseason game at left tackle, and Pugh, fine, no problem, healthy, as far as we know, unless he stubs his toe today, is playing right tackle, and now somebody goes down. One of those two guys can't finish the game in Detroit. Help me out here.
Yeah, then you're going to be throwing a guard or a center out on the tackle spot, and that's never a good thing in week 1 of the regular season.
I just can't even imagine what you would do.
Well, that's why if they're going to do any maneuver, to me it would be to bring in some depth on the back end. Nugs brought up John Jerry. I think John Jerry is more than suitable right now. You have to take into consideration he was dealing with a knee injury for the bulk of the offseason. He finally got some work in during the preseason. He's familiar with the system. To me, Paul, if I have to choose between a guy off the street or John Jerry, I'm taking John Jerry at this point.
I think you have to because at least he knows what he's doing. I'll say this. Jerry has taken some snaps at tackle with the Dolphins. He wasn't very good at it, and they were very quick
to
make sure.
Wasn't very good at it.
No, and they were quick to move him back inside. But maybe that's the emergency solution if they need him in Detroit. Jerry goes out to right tackle, you know, if one of the tackles gets hurt or goes to left tackle, whatever the case may be, and then Dallas Reynolds comes in and plays guard. Maybe that's what they have to do in an emergency.
That's why, to me, it's so critical to get Mosley healthy for this game, so at least you have an insurance policy. Let's head back to the lines. Rocky is in Florida. Rocky, good morning. What's happening?
What's up, Rocky?
Hey, Rocky, what's happening?
How's it going, fellas?
Doing well. What you got?
The baby was howling and couldn't hear y'all.
Well, the baby should know better. It's Big Blue Kickoff Live right now. I mean, the nerve of that baby this morning.
Got to pay attention to the show.
I remember Paul and John was talking yesterday about the penalties. John was like, so you're okay with the quarterback headshots and going low? And I was like, well, of course, nobody's okay with that. But
no.
Paul was saying just over all the changes, how much that it's changed, how much it's affected the defense. And all I thought back was that Tennessee game where Kiwanuka has got, I think it's Rich Young, wrapped up, and he's afraid they're going to throw the flag, so he lets his hands up, and Young takes off.
Yeah, remember that play very well with Vince Young. You know, here's the bottom line, Rocky, and everybody will tell you this. The tackling in this league has gotten very shoddy. Now, part of the reason is because the CBA doesn't allow as much hitting anymore during practices or during training camp. That is definitely part of the deal. The other part of it is because in the name of safety, and we all like that, they have done all kinds of things to the rules to try to inhibit injuries. And that's great. Again, I love the fact that we're trying to keep guys healthy. Nobody wants to see these guys hurt, especially after their careers are over and they're hobbling around in their apartments and homes. Nobody wants to see that. Trust me. But I also believe that so much of the teeth has been taken out of this game defensively that we're really starting to make this game more and more like a video game every year. And that's a problem. Because if you want to play Xbox, then sit down in front of your living room television and play Xbox. Don't come to the stadium and play Xbox. That's not what the game is for.
Yeah, and they think that they're giving what the fans want, but I don't think fans want to see that, really. But
well, unfortunately, my friend, fantasy football has poisoned society to the point where they just want to see stats and numbers and exploding scoreboards and footballs flying through the air like seagulls. That's what they want.
In case you're just joining us for the first time, clearly Paul's a big fantasy player. I mean, that has been laid out time and time again. But continue, Rocky. What else you got?
Right. As far as some cuts go, like the deal with Kuhn and Quarles, we knew, I think I even said this to John, that we knew that Quarles wasn't going to clear waivers and that nobody was really going to jump up and snag Kuhn. I think we could have kept Quarles and let Kuhn go, and whether he could go on the 50 or the practice squad or not, I mean, nobody was fixing to just race to go pick Kuhn up, I don't think.
Well, Kuhn would have been eligible for the practice squad because of the injury, and he didn't accumulate 32 games over the first two seasons. But there is still upside regarding Marcus Kuhn. I disagree with the critics who are saying that Quarles has more upside than Marcus Kuhn. Kuhn's older, I'll give you that, but the body of work is very limited for Marcus Kuhn at this point because he missed so much time. So that doesn't mean that he's reached his ceiling at this point yet.
To be fair, and we talked about this some yesterday, my bigger question is why Kerry Wynn is on this roster. I mean,
that's what I was thinking to get to, too.
I would have kept Kuhn and Quarles if I had my druthers, and Wynn would have been the guy I would have tried to sneak through, although we both have evidence, or at least John and I did, that someone would have claimed him as well. But would that have been so horrible if you could have kept both Quarles and Kuhn?
If they would have went 9-0 linemen and not kept Brewer, they could have did that, Paul. But and I don't know why they kept Brewer.
We discussed that yesterday, too. Yeah, we discussed that yesterday, too. There were other places on this roster where you could have trimmed a player that you don't think is worthy. Now, the only thing with that is that if you had kept the extra DT, you would have been really, really heavy at that position. But in my opinion, what's so bad about that if you really believe in the player?
Well, didn't that take – well, I know Jenkins can – shift over to left DT, but or left DE, but I thought Quarles had lined up a little bit at defensive end.
Well, he's not really a defensive end. He is an interior guy.
Yeah, he's not an edge guy.
And so is Kuhn. Kuhn's an interior guy, too.
Well, you have versatility, though, Rocky, because Jenkins and Robert Ayers, though, can be moved inside and outside. So you have two players that really can serve as dual roles, and that's beneficial when you're playing the numbers game.
Kiwi, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and well, I just thought it funny. We was playing the Patriots, and then they snagged him up. It's like we smeared him in their face, kind of.
Well, that's the example, Rocky, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for joining us this morning of other team scouting departments doing their homework, and the Giants do the same thing. They're looking at the opponents they're playing. They're looking at teams that they're not going up against in the preseason. That's how you round out your roster.
Tom tells us every summer during the broadcast production meetings as we're getting ready for the preseason games, that these guys are not only trying out against their fellow teammates to make a roster, but they're trying out against everybody else in the league because there are scouts looking at every game during the preseason, and they're trying to figure out, is that guy on the Cardinals or is that guy on the Seahawks or is that guy on the 49ers or that guy on the Rams better than the guy we have on the back end of our roster? This is what happens. So they're not just fighting each other. I hate to use the word fighting, but competing with each other on campus. They're competing with everybody coast to coast.
Look at Corey Washington. Arizona let him go. The Giants did their homework, and they brought him in. And now he made the 53-man roster. We see it time and time again.
And I still can't understand why the Cardinals, who brought him into their rookie minicamp, had him there for just a cup of coffee, decided to let him off campus. I don't get that. I really don't. The Cardinals have you know, a decent offense. Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, they can wing it. But is their receiving corps so deep that they could have just told this guy, thanks for stopping by, and not even brought him to summer camp to take a look at him? Why bring him to rookie camp only to let him turn around and walk away? I don't get that.
You're right. Arizona does not have an overwhelming amount of depth, and he brings a little bit versatility to the table, considering that he's bigger than all of the other wide receivers they have, because they lost Andre Roberts to the Redskins. They have Larry Fitzgerald, John Brown, who is the rookie out of Pittsburgh State, right, who they're very high on. But we're not talking about huge guys. John Brown's only 5'11", and Larry Fitzgerald, he's 6'3". You have Floyd.
Floyd, they but expect him to be their lead guy.
They do expect him,
year.
But he's been a little up and down during the course of his early years. So, I mean, I could definitely make some space for Corey Washington. And I'm looking over this roster right now. Surprise. But, hey, the Giants will take it. They're not going to complain. Let's head back to the lines, and we go to Charlie in Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How y'all doing?
Hi. Hey, Charlie. What you got?
Oh, my God. Jerry Reese does it again. I can't believe what he's done to this roster again. And Qualls should have been on the roster. Coons is not. I just can't believe he kept Coons. I can't believe that they went with Hanofsky. I know he's good, but he's always injured. You know, he's always got an injury. He's got one now. Connors just doesn't get injured. He just plays. And I think he's a better blocker. And, you know, let him go. I don't get it. And just quoting Coughlin, you know, I'd like to have all, you know, a whole bunch of guys like Connors around.
Well, Charlie, let me throw this out to you, and you know, because I know sometimes you like to be Mr. Critique. What was the last Giants player? Who was the last Giants player that they let go or they made a bad decision about and came back to haunt them or became a star on another team? Can somebody name me that? Name me that.
At the top of my head, let me see. Probably Akeem Nicks might be one.
Well, but the jury's still out on that. You can't give me that. I mean, I want a guy that went elsewhere. Give me a Jake Ballard. Did he do anything? A Michael Boley. Marvin Austin. Has he done much of anything since? Name me a player.
Marvin Austin's going to do pretty well with Denver.
But that's the game of speculation, Charlie. But, Charlie, we're going down the speculative road again. I want a guy. Give me stats.
He's on the Denver 53, and he's going to be starting. He's going to be one of the guys starting.
Well, listen, everybody who starts in this league is not a superstar necessarily.
Marvin Austin, I think, is on his fourth team, by the way.
You're going to tell me Will Hill is not going to be playing pretty well after his six games? And, Paul, I know you just talked about Hosley, and wasn't that smart to have, like, we got 55 guys. Well, we could have had 56, because we could have kept Will Hill, and we could have waited for him to come off the 60.
No. Hold on. Hold on. Yeah. Before you go anywhere else on this one, Tom Coughlin had read Will Hill the Riot Act, and he said to him, I need to depend on you. I need to know that you're going to be there. And if you're going to take actions that are going to force the league to pull you off of my field, I cannot count on you anymore. Tom Coughlin read Will Hill, the Riot Act. Do not put that on the Giants organization or on Jerry Reese for giving up on him. The kid knew exactly what the rules were. Tom Coughlin had patience beyond belief to have this guy here for 3 years because he was a terrific player, and coach tried to help him to get his life on track, and the kid screwed up again. At some point,
can you tell me
at
this?
Some
can
point,
you tell me
no,
this?
No, no, no. At some point, when you literally break the coaches.
You got to agree with me. Ozzie Newsom is probably one of the best GMs out there. Why would Ozzie Newsom pick up with that if he's such a risk? Tell me that.
Because Will Hill is an outstanding player, and they're desperate for a safety in Baltimore.
Exactly.
And so he now starts with a clean slate. Will Hill has not betrayed anyone in the Ravens organization. He betrayed the Giants 3 times.
He didn't betray the Giants.
Sure he did.
That's not betraying the Giants.
He betrayed himself with his conduct, which then forced the league to pull him off the field. That is a betrayal to himself, to his teammates, and his coaching staff.
But did the league take him out of the game? They didn't. They gave him 6 games. That's the difference. And a GM like Ozzie Newsome, who is the smartest GM, and he knows players, and he knows talent, took him.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny? Lance, let's just end this call right here because I picked Will Hill to be one of my rookie dark horses when he got here. I was the biggest Will Hill backer and supporter when he first walked on campus of anybody in the press room, okay? Said the kid had Pro Bowl potential. That's how much I could spot it from the first rookie minicamp when he walked on the field. I'm like, this guy's got it. So for me to turn my back on him, okay, like what Paul Sorvino does in Goodfellas, okay, when he hands over the money and he tells Leota, that's it, now I turn my back on you. That's the way it is, okay? Will Hill betrayed himself, his teammates, and this organization 3 times. That's it. It's over. Let's not go back there again.
What Giants fans need to understand is the organization did everything it could to assist and help Will Hill back on the right track.
They sure did.
If the Giants didn't do anything, you know, you could say, all right, maybe you give him another chance or two. But they went out on a limb, they gave him assistance, and then he winds up failing another test. So at that point, you have to ask yourself as an organization, how many more chances do we give him? And what type of message do we want to send to the rest of the locker room? That's what it came down to with respect to the Giants organization. So from the Baltimore Ravens standpoint, you know, they're not the organization that has gone out and tried to assist Will Hill time and time again. So maybe they have a little bit more freedom and flexibility to go out and say, you know what, we'll at least bring him in.
In any event, it's done. Will Hill's Giants career is now over. He has himself to thank for that. And for his sake, I hope he gets himself straight, and I hope he does well for the Baltimore Ravens, because I like the guy. I really do. I got to know him. I like the guy.
And he's a great player. There's no
denying
that.
He's an outstanding talent, and I want him to do very well. And you know what? When he does do well, if he does, I won't hold it against the Giants for getting rid of him, because this situation was over. Will Hill saw to it that it was over. That's not on the Giants.
In terms of the point that we were getting back to, because we don't want to necessarily make this whole show about Will Hill. We pretty much addressed that. I was throwing out to Charlie, name me another player that the Giants waived or cut and then all of a sudden developed into a star. And you'd be hard-pressed to name somebody. Mike Farmer on Twitter, he throws out Ryan Clark. Ryan Clark, though, actually wound up starting 4 games in that 2003 campaign, so he was physically on the roster. I'm talking about a guy that either was injury-plagued, never got out there for the Giants, or was on the practice squad or something else they got rid of and then went to another team and all of a sudden flourished.
The qualifications, I think, that you're trying to find for this category are prospects, not guys who were legitimate players like Barry Cofield, for example, who got big money to go to the Redskins and played well for them. And you know, because if you're looking at that category, obviously Linval Joseph just cashed in with the Vikings. Okay, that's a different category. You're talking about prospects who for some reason or another didn't work out as a Giant and then blossomed when they got a chance to go somewhere else. And I'll be honest with you, you'd have to go back to the days of, for instance, kicker Matt Stover, Olindo Mare, punter Brad Maynard. Those are the kinds of guys you'd have to talk about.
One other candidate I'll throw out, and Joe, who assists us on the show, threw him out. I think this is a pretty good recommendation. However, it's not as if he had many great years with the Packers. Ryan Grant. Would you put him in that category, Paul?
Well, Ryan Grant was not let go by the Giants. He was traded. In fact, it was 5 minutes before the final cutdown day that 1 year. The Giants were trying to figure out what to do because they had too many running backs. All right, it was between Ward and Grant for the last running back spot. And the Packers called up Jerry Reese and said, I think it was Jerry, and called up, I know, or maybe it had been Ernie at that point. I can't even remember the timing of it now. But they called the Giants 5 minutes before the trade deadline and said, look, we want a running back. We need a running back. Which one you give us? And the Giants were like, well, we're not sure which one we're going to cut you. All right, we'll give you a draft pick for Ryan Grant. Okay, fine. Because the Giants really, it was razor thin. They liked all their running backs. They weren't even sure. They had told Ryan Grant a couple of hours earlier, they called him and told him he had made the team. Okay? So it wasn't like they were looking to get rid of him or cutting him. They told him he had made the team. I don't know that they were going to cut Ward either. They might have wound up keeping them all. But the Packers then called and said, we want Ryan Grant. Here's a draft choice. We'll alleviate some of your logjam for you. Okay, fine. Take Ryan Grant. And Ward went on to do some pretty decent things for the Giants over the next couple of years, too. It wasn't like they totally left themselves barren. So I don't know if he counts.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could join us for Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Steve is in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I was beginning to wonder if I was going to get on. Y'all talking up a storm. Y'all know this thing cuts off after 50 minutes.
We are aware. Listen, we got the clock rolling. Don't worry, Steve. We're on top of things.
I'm going to be real. First of all, I'm backing my man Charlie up all the way. It's absolutely ridiculous that Marcus Kuhn is still on this roster and Qualls is gone. And I just want to say this. This is not going to be a coffin moment right now. First of all, the only thing I don't agree with Charlie is this, that he put it on Jerry Reese. You cannot blame Jerry Reese for the players we got, because we all know it's Tom Coughlin and the rest of the staff that's evaluating him. So all these people who want to call and blame it on Jerry Reese, refocus your negative energy in regards to the roster, to Tom Coughlin, on the players that we've had and have let go at this point.
Paul, I got you. Hold on. Kevin Walter.
He went out to play for the Texans.
The Bengals, too.
Wow.
He was a Giants.
You haven't cut me short on that?
No, wow. Well, because you want to know. Wanted to know. Go ahead.
No, I don't want to know. This is what I want to get off my chest. I got some things I want to get off my chest. But, Paul, I don't know what in the world you were talking about Matthew Stafford not being in the league in 2 years. That's absolutely crazy to me. Now, he might not. His decision making is questionable, but his accuracy, are you real? Are you serious?
I'm not a Matthew Stafford fan.
This guy's not going to be in the league.
You know what?
He's a good player.
I was having fun with John yesterday. You guys, this is when you get your video, you'll be able to see some of the smirks and stuff that we do. I'm not a Matthew Stafford fan, but no, to say he would be out of the league in 2 years, that's absolutely half tongue in cheek. I'm not a big fan.
Okay, I was hoping so, because I was like, I hope all the Now, I'm also have one of those people that think that, you know, we should have kept Connor for the fact that there's health issues with Halinowski that really bothers me, because I could see this guy being injured after week three. You know, I don't know what we're thinking, man, but I do know one thing. All the people who want to blame, you know, Tom Coughlin after the people who we let go, Jerry Reese, stop it. Stop it right now, because you got to put that on the coaches. So with that said, I'm still very optimistic about it, but I'm not very happy, man. And the fact that the Patriots picked up Qualls really irritates us that much more as the fan base. So hopefully, you know, we hate the Patriots. So I think, you know, the fact that he went to the Patriots makes it that much worse. So hopefully it won't come back to haunt us, man. But that's really all I had today. Thanks for taking my call. And great show. I'll be listening off the air.
All right, Steve. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
One thing for Steve about John Connor, was not picked up by anybody. You know, the only Giants jettison player who got taken was Qualls.
And then Kendall Gaskin signed with the Niners practice squad.
That just happened last night.
Right.
But John Connor has a limited market. He found that out last year. You know, when he was sitting out there for more than half a season.
Cut by the Bengals.
And then, all of a sudden, Halinowski goes down and the Giants call him. He was absolutely flabbergasted that he had to sit out half a season, because he's thinking to himself, what did I do? I can play in this league. I'm a good fullback. No one ever questioned that. John Connor's a good player. Tom Coughlin himself has said he is a good fullback for this league. He's got to have a job. But because of the way this league has changed, you know, the new NFL Xbox, okay, the fullback is a dying breed. Now, here's what I will tell you, Steve. If Halinowski gets hurt in week three, chances are John Connor's going to be there to pick up the phone, because they will have him on speed dial in a heartbeat. And John Connor will be the next guy who comes in, and it could be for the second year in a row that he would have to replace Halinowski. That could happen. So if you really believe Halinowski is going to get hurt, I'd say there's a good chance John Connor's back here.
As long as he's still on the market, he has familiarity with the system. Let's head back to the lines. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, good morning. What's happening?
Good morning. I just want to follow up. I was called in complaining, yet Paul heard me yesterday about the calls in the Patriots game where they called Bowman for a little touch foul and then they let go.
Yeah, that set us off on a 10-minute rant, I believe.
Yeah, well, I'm still ranting about it because I'm worried about it because we had all these penalties earlier in the game and it in a season there, like we're averaging at least 10 a game. And them two in the Patriots game, if we would have got them calls like in the Lions game, they could change the whole complexion where they take a touchdown and a turnover away from
us. And it just hit me again because I've been trying to place you for a long time. John Gruden. Think about it. Think about it. Listen to him, Lance. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, you're talking about the voice?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know where you were going with that.
Yes. Yes. You sound like John Gruden. Why don't you start talking about Johnny Manziel? It's going to be priceless.
But what John said yesterday, he said he thinks that this touch fall here, this touch football fall here, was put in because of Seattle. And I'm trying to say here, I'm trying to think it should be pretty interesting to watch Thursday's night game between Seattle and the Packers, especially if Rodgers and them get the lead, to see their defensive backs if they're going to call them against Seattle every time they touch them a little bit.
Well, Joe, listen, I understand that you're concerned about how the penalties for the Giants are going up, but in fairness, the league-wide is having trouble with all of these penalties. The numbers have skyrocketed. I mean, they've done studies already. The first 2 weeks of the preseason alone, there was an average of about 20 penalties a game. That was up from the regular season in the last week of last year's regular season where it was about 15 or 16. So to me, it's not just the Giants that are in that boat. It's everybody.
Lance, I asked John yesterday to look it up while we were working if we could get the final preseason stats. Have you seen that anywhere?
I haven't seen the totals. I just saw halfway.
Yeah, I wanted to see them all.
We could try to find the entirety.
The league must have that available somewhere, but I couldn't find it.
Well, John sort of thought that Seattle had a lot to do with this, and I'm just wondering if this is going to – we'll watch that game – and if this is going to be the way they call it in that game, they're going to call it Sunday and Monday.
Joe, you know what's funny? And I mean this wholeheartedly. I was one of those folks who last year spoke out very, very publicly about how Seattle's secondary in particular does cheat and does clutch and does grab and does everything outside of the rules on each and every snap, and they were getting away with it. And I could not understand how that the league would allow this to happen. But it clearly is there on the tape if you want to watch it. And it was very nauseating to me. But at the same time, I have to tell you, I'm also the person who says I like the players to be allowed to play. And how I've talked often about Super Bowl 42 being the finest officiated game I've ever seen because they allowed the Giants and the Patriots to play. And the players decided who won that game, not the officials. So it's hard for me to argue in either way because, you know, it's kind of a contradiction. I want the players to play, but I also don't like how the Seahawks got away with murder every week.
I just can't understand, Paul. I want them to be consistent where they call that little touch foul on Bowman. And then in the end zone, the Giants receiver got mugged. I mean, there was two arms around him. He hit him early. The defensive back never turned around to look for the ball. It was so obvious.
I know. All right, but you know what? That's just what's known as a missed call.
But how can you miss it?
Look, guys have been missing calls since the 50s.
Come on. Then, like, what's his name used to say, Jerry Glanville, or so, not for long, to the NFL, whatever. He shouldn't be in there. That's a bad call.
Look, my friend, that has nothing to do with the rules change. That has to do with a guy who missed the call. It's that simple.
All right. Hey, how about on a third down and three or third and four? You think what's his name's going to be in there, our starting running back, and they try to run the ball a little more on third or three or four? Or you think Hillis is going to be in there?
I hope that you see Jennings and Andre Williams get a lot of those third down carries. But there's no question. But there's also no question that in some instances they will have Hillis in there too. There's no doubt because he's a good third down back.
I was just thinking the way they ain't synchronized yet with their throwing in that to go two tight ends and put them in there in third or three or four and let them run.
I'll tell you what. How about that fourth and one against the Patriots and Andre Williams busted off like a 40-yard run? Did you like that?
Right. Yeah, I love that, but I don't think he's going to be in there or third. Maybe they'll put him on fourth or short downs, but he won't be in there on third down. He'll be first and second, Paul, to give Jennings a break. You
all right, Joe, appreciate the phone call. And I think actually as the season progresses, they're going to look to increase the load for Andre Williams. Right now, I would agree with Joe. He's not too much of a receiver, but down the road, I think that they envision him having a much larger role. So I did get the penalty statistics. This is a comparison between 2013's preseason and 2014's preseason.
Good.
So here we go. Illegal contact. I have the breakdown of each call. In 2013, 18 penalties were called for illegal contact. 2014, 99. That was a percentage increase of 450. This is league-wide. This is not just the Giants. Defensive holding, 38 penalties in 2013. 172 this year. That is a percentage increase of 353. Illegal use of the hands, 28 calls in 2013, 124 this year, a percentage increase of 343. The only percentage that wasn't through the roof, total penalties, when you take everything into consideration, 1,020 in 2013, 1,367 87 in 2014. So that's a 36% increase. If you take into consideration all penalties, but when you look at the ones that they're holding in on.
So if I do the math, then that means they let a lot of other stuff go.
Correct. Exactly. That's exactly what that equation plays out to say. Offensive holding, this and that. You know, we'll turn our back on that. Defensive holding, illegal contact. We're going to put you under the microscope.
Yeah, tripping, don't worry about it.
That's the best way to read into this. So when Joe's basically all worked up that this call wasn't called and this one was missed, there you go, Joe. They're focusing on specific ones. That doesn't meet your criteria.
They had to tilt the scale the other way.
There you go. Or else we literally are going to have five-hour games. And get ready for that. These preseason games were approaching 4 hours nearly. Let's head back to the lines. Gerald is in New Jersey. Gerald, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing? Good morning, Pulley D and Lance Metal.
Good morning to you, Gerald. So what's on your mind?
You know, I was really going to call in, but the reason why I'm calling is because Chuck from Maine, he kind of got me a little aggravated.
Oh, he gets everybody aggravated. See, we have basically durability issues when it comes to dealing with Charlie. This may have been your first or second hearing of him, but you'll eventually warm up to him, I promise.
Actually, I listen to him pretty much every morning. I listen to you guys every morning at 9:30 while I'm at work. He's my day off, so I'm actually I got the chance to call in.
Well, I appreciate that. So what bothered you about Charlie?
Well, I mean, it's that he always wants to put a blame on Jerry Reese. I mean, get off the man's back. I mean, he's been doing what he's been. I mean, he's brought the franchise two Super Bowl rings. He's put together a couple good draft classes. Some draft classes I kind of disagree with, but you know, I have faith in what he tries to bring to the table. And I also understand why some of the moves were made for the cuts. Like for instance, Paul DeTino touched on how Connor was cut and nobody picked him up. I mean, yeah, that's great that the that nobody picked him up as of yet, because if Hanowski does get hurt, the Giants do have him in their back pocket, and they'll be able to pick him up in the worst case scenario. And I understand why the Giants kept Hanowski, because Hanowski brings more of a dual threat type of deal. Hanowski, he can catch the ball off the backfield, he can block, and he can also run for some yards too, which in some cases Connor cannot. So a lot of moves the Giants have made, I understand why, but I'm not gonna sit there and criticize of things that they're doing as a team and stop blaming Jerry Reese. And another thing too is that with quarrels, I mean, sometimes you got to take a chance and cut some guys that you don't want to cut, and sometimes they're going to get picked up. It's nothing you can really do about that. That's the way it goes. I mean,
that's part of the numbers game. Yeah.
It happens every year. So, I mean, my thing to all the our Giants fans out here, let's stop being real critical about what the Giants are doing, and, you know, let's hope that, you know, everything, you know, just, you know, turns up for next Monday night. I mean, and the Giants really haven't had a chance to have a whole week of game planning. All the players aren't in yet. So everybody just have to sit back, relax, and just, you know, see what happens. Let the season start. I mean, maybe in week two, week three. I mean, if we get to a 3-0 start, then all these fans can probably shut up and, you know, just like, okay, well, let's cheer my team on instead of sitting here pointing fingers like they're a GM. They're not getting paid for all the stuff they're saying. It's just their opinion at the end of the day. So, I mean, I think everybody needs to relax. I mean, I have faith and confidence in what we can do this year, and I'm just ready to rock. So, I mean, that's all I really got to say.
All right, Joe, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Glad that we were able to get you for the first time. Listens every day. We'd certainly appreciate that from our listeners and our callers each and every morning. I understand a lot of people are worked up about Kelce Quirrells, and you get excited about a prospect during the preseason. But, you know, to put things in big picture perspective, at least in the short-term future, Paul, realistically, how much of an impact was he really going to have on this roster this season? Let's just look at this season. Realistically, given how many other defensive tackles are in front of him, how much do you really think he would have played?
Well, there's certainly a good chance he may not have gotten a jersey on most Sundays.
There you go. Down the road, of course, could make an impact on this roster. But they have Jonathan Hankins, who's still on a rookie contract. If you're worried about long-term because Mike Patterson and Cullen Jenkins are getting up there and Patterson is only on a one-year deal, Hankins is there. This is the guy you could start to build around now that you lost Linville Joseph. So it's not as if they have no youth in that defensive tackle mixture.
And they still hope that Marcus Kuhn
Correct.
Develops.
Absolutely. And I don't think he's reached the ceiling, Paul.
He should
Am
not
I stretching
have.
It?
He should not have. It's always possible. Sometimes a guy will plateau, and that's all there is. But they still think there's ups on him. And I'll tell you this. He certainly has an attitude that bodes well for him. The guy wants to learn. He says all the time, I will do anything the coaches want me to do.
So that certainly bodes well for the Giants. And if there's any concerns about depth, as Paul mentioned earlier, you know, if they got rid of an offensive lineman who you thought was going to be something, I could see and I understand the frustration. But when we're talking about a fifth or sixth defensive tackle, that's a little different boat here. I don't know if that's the biggest necessity, the biggest need on this team right now.
I had Quirrells on my 53, my own personal 53. I'm sorry he's gone, but I'm not going to shoot off fireworks about it. You know, to me, there are other bodies on the 53 that I would have more of a dispute with than what they did with him. You know, and we've talked about those other guys many times before on this show. So there's no sense in rehashing those. But, you know, you gotta pick your battles and you gotta, you know, kind of prioritize what you believe are the issues. And I agree with Lance on this one, folks. I like Kelce Quirrells, but the backup defensive tackle issue is not the most pressing problem on this team.
Let's close out the program with a tweet or two. Ben Gruen at Gruen Ben asks, are you guys comfortable carrying only three running backs? I predict that Michael Cox will be on the 53 by midseason. Do you agree?
Well, look at the injury track record of Rashad Jennings, who's never played 16 games in his career. In one season. Look at the track record of Peyton Hillis, who has only done it once, I believe, in his career.
Chances are we're going to see another body.
If you're taking bets.
I would agree, and I think part of the reason why they wanted another running back on the practice squad was because you can at least call that player up if for some reason somebody gets hurt, and they basically said to themselves, well, we don't necessarily need Gaskins and Cox, but we want somebody who knows the system, can also play special teams. That's why Cox, to me, is the better asset when it comes to keeping him on the practice squad.
Cox plays specials, and quite frankly, he's quicker, more elusive, has the speed quotient that Gaskins did not have, and we saw a lot of Cox even catching passes out in open space in practice. You didn't see that much out of Gaskins doing that. He's a between-the-tackles downhill power runner, and I think that they think with this offense, Cox could be more useful down the line.
Another statement on Twitter, not so much a question, when we were talking about the players that Giants let go, who may have come back to haunt them, and this player was somebody that left via free agency, so that's why I just wanted to clarify. It comes from Sack at Jack in the Box. Did someone forget Martellus Bennett? But Martellus Bennett, he left to go to Chicago because the Bears just offered him more money. It's not as if the Giants didn't want to bring him back.
And I thought your
financial
qualification was the guy was a prospect.
Absolutely, that was my qualification.
Bennett was not a prospect.
Yeah, so you can't necessarily continue to throw out more and and more free agents that perhaps the Giants.
I'm thinking as I go over this again, Kevin Walter would have to be, because he had a really good several years with the Bengals. I think Kevin Walter with the Bengals and the Texans would have to be the guy who was most accomplished of the, quote, prospects the Giants have allowed to walk through these doors.
Let me see. I mean, I remember him making his money with the Texans. I want to see what he may have done elsewhere to see if perhaps he did some damage in Cincy.
I'm pretty sure he was a decade player. Unless, he was around a long time.
Unless I'm thinking of a different Kevin Walter. Yeah, he started off with the Bengals 03 through 05. Only had 19 receptions in 2005. He had 8 in 2004 and 3 in 2003.
Right, so didn't do too much damage. Much there.
Houston is where he started to blossom, right, Paul. Because you look at some seasons, 2007, 65 catches, 800 receiving yards, 08, 60 receptions, 899 receiving yards. He had two seasons with over 50.
Those are legit numbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's the guy that I would, if you want to have a poster boy for your category, that would be the guy. Okay,
that would certainly be a good candidate in terms of other players here. Let's try to maybe get to another tweet or two as we wind down the minutes here remaining in the program. I know a number of you threw out some interesting comments and also recommended some players. We have a lot of comments on Will Hill. We reopened up that chat today because we were talking about players who the Giants let go as a result of maybe suspensions or some other punishments, trying to see if there's anything else worth throwing out here before we wrap up the program. Tom Tarn at Tarn Designs. How ready, healthy is John Beeson? What was his injury again? It was a foot injury, to clarify the injury, and he was out there during practice for the first time. He was activated from the PUP list. I would say, Paul, it's looking good for him to play. However, don't assume that he's going to be in there for four quarters and his snap count is going to be a typical snap count for a starter.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think he'll be a bit spotted. They're going to look at that Lions offense and they're going to try to match him up in situations where they believe he is most necessary. In other words, when the Lions are going four wides, I don't think you're going to see John Beeson on the field.
I would say that's a pretty safe bet. I don't know if they want to test the waters to that degree. And we know, by the way, the Detroit Lions, and we're going to get into the Lions throughout the course of this week, they can line up, Paul, three, four, five players between the running backs and the wide receivers. They have a lot of weapons to spread the wealth.
And they got that tight end, Ebron, in the draft, a guy who I certainly did not want here, and I have no problem saying that. But in their offense in Detroit, I'm sure he's going to do some things.
Joe Fourier they have, who's a big red zone target, and they have a number of wide receivers, and let's not forget about what Reggie Bush can do. Certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in this morning. We are with you each and every morning at 9:30 a.m. Eastern for the duration of this week. Next week, we will start to switch over to noon, and I believe that's going to go into effect on Tuesday, which is the day right after the Lions game, so we'll be back here recapping the game. We will move to noon Eastern.
Oh, they told you Tuesday.
Yes.
I was told Monday.
Well, Monday, if that's the case, you will be in Detroit.
Yes.
John will be in Detroit.
It is Tuesday. Nina
and
says
I will
Tuesday.
Be here with a camera and nobody to talk to. So if you want to convince them, Paul, to do it on Monday, hey, I'm going to be here doing the show.
That's all right. Nile says it's Tuesday, so I'm going to go
Tuesday.
With that.
Correct, yes.
He's the internet manager.
Mark
here,
your calendars. Absolutely. So Tuesday, we will switch gears and move to noon. We'll continue to remind you about that throughout the course of this week. And it will still be a talk show premise. I don't want anybody to fear as if we're going to change things around. We're still going to take phone calls. It's going to be extremely interactive. The only difference is you're going to look at our ugly mugs. That's the only difference. Other than that, the show is not changing one bit. So
I'm still not sure why anybody would want to do that.
Well, hey, we're making the ultimate sacrifice, and we'll hear some feedback as a result. Anyway, it was good speaking to everybody, good chatting with everybody. Appreciate the feedback on Twitter and the phones. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 9:30 a.m. Eastern. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Have a good one.